He'll be here.
Blog Talk Radio.
Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, a talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Great Evolution Debate 3. I am the host of the show, Neil Haley. You can go to my website at TotalTutor.org to learn more information on the Total Tutor and the Total Education Network. We keep growing each and every day. And unbelievably enough, our major guest, meaning the guest who started this whole thing, Rob Roselli's not called yet, but we do have our first person to debate him on the line. And I would like to welcome Kelly Smith, a professor from Clemson University. Thanks for calling the program.
Sure thing.
And I'm excited, Kelly, because, again, you have been chomping at the bit, saying, oh, you got 5 or 6 minutes. Well, you got 30 minutes for Rob now, and he has not called yet. So kind of tell the audience a little bit about yourself till he gets before he calls in.
Well, I teach at Clemson University. I have a master's degree in evolutionary biology and a PhD in philosophy of science. So this is the kind of issue I talk a lot about. I teach a class in evolution and creationism. I've given public talks on this. I've done research papers on this. So this is something I spend quite a bit of time thinking about.
So when you hear this whole push now, for evolution to not be taught at all, and like, let's say, you know, the whole issue that's happened in Tennessee and a couple other states where they're allowing high school teachers, they're not forced to teach evolution even though it's in the standards. What is your thought on that?
Well, I think most of us would agree that it's very important that we teach our students about science. The United States doesn't really do that good a job teaching about science, and science is a very important aspect of the modern world. And whether you like it or not, evolution is one of the best scientific theories anybody's ever come up with. It's one of the best supported. So you can't really argue that we should take science seriously and teach our students about science without also agreeing that we should teach our students the best science we have, and that includes evolution. So when people say that, you know, we're not going to make teachers teach this, even though it's in the standards, what they're saying is contradictory. Well, it's in the standards because it's the best science. But then we're going to say it's okay for teachers not to teach their students about this. And I think part of the reason why people think this is okay is they think that you can go about your daily lives and do your job without knowing anything about evolution. And, of course, you know, you can do that to some extent. But if you're involved in any area that's at all technical, evolution is important. It's important in modern medicine. It's important in biology. It's important in environmental studies. So you can't really understand a lot of the problems that we're dealing with as a society unless you have a firm grounding in evolutionary biology.
And what I'm trying to check is Rob usually calls, and maybe that it said in the thing something different. So what I'm doing right now is checking my Gmail account while we're talking. Now, I just think that, can you give me a stance, because he's not listening right now. How can you, what do you think there's any type of debate out there that evolution is just absolutely a false thing that should not be taught? Have you seen anything out there that's made you think that has any type of an argument?
Well, there's a debate in the sense that people believe that, and they sincerely and vehemently believe that. And, you know, I have to respect their honesty when they tell me that they don't believe in evolution. And that's fine. They can have whatever beliefs they want. But I try very hard to be open-minded on this, as all scientists are. You know, scientist believes a theory because the evidence supports it. But a good scientist will say, if you give me a different theory with better evidence, I will immediately adopt it. And I have looked through all the arguments and all the evidences put forward by people that don't like evolution, and frankly, none of them are very convincing at all. So when you look at, you know, evolution, which has one of the largest bodies of evidence scientists have ever amassed, and its alternative, whatever you want to call it, creationism, which has really very little evidence of any kind, and the evidence it does have is oftentimes misguided, it's a pretty easy call.
Well, you got good luck on this, because guess what happened? It said for the host to call the guest. So we're going to try to call Rob right now. I'm setting this up, and let's see if this is going to work. I'm doing some cutting and pasting of his number, and it didn't work on that, but I'm going to try, and I'm using myself, so this is just a great situation right now. I'm just trying to figure out, I guess I'm going to cut and paste the phone number onto something else, and then hopefully we'll get this going. But you're getting a couple minutes, seconds to kind of put yourself out there and figure out what he can't stand. Now, going back with the whole situation, Kelly, about what Rob was saying last time when you were debating him, did he have any sense of an understanding of what to do in this? I mean, what was your thought on that? Like, did you think that he had any grounds on his argument?
Well, to be perfectly honest, I'm not quite sure what Mr. Rosselli's argument is. That's one of the things I wanted to ask him when he comes on, is exactly what it is he thinks has happened here in the universe and on Earth. What he tends to do is ask a lot of questions of the other people on the show without really saying anything very specific himself. And he loves to talk about astrophysics, which is really a very different thing than evolution, which is, you know, evolution is a story about how life got to be the way it is on Earth. Astrophysics is about the origins of the universe. And, you know, there's some overlap, but they're really quite different kinds of things. And let me just make it really clear. I'm no astrophysicist. I can talk about astrophysics, but I'm not an expert.
Okay, we're trying to dial right now. So
hello?
Rob, guess what? I didn't know it was on the confirmation. We do have Rob Rosselli on the line. I didn't know it was the confirmation. I thought you were going to call me. So I'm glad we just checked that, and we have your first debater on the line. He's kind of gotten his opportunity to say his piece because he only had 6 minutes to debate you last show, okay?
Okay.
All right, so we got Rob Rosselli on the line. Rob, tell your again your whole stance, just who you are for a second, your book, and then we'll get right into the debate.
Well, my name's Rob Rosselli. My personal background and present employment is civil engineering. Website is boxofsunglasses.com. That's one word. I have two books available on there, PDF download, or you can get them through Amazon. As far as these so-called debates on evolution, I posed a question two debates ago, which is, translates to about 3 hours, which I still not have had answered, and now, and that is, how is Newton's first law of motion, how does that comport with the Big Bang? And in fact, all of Newton's laws, three laws of motion, the two laws of thermodynamics, and I might as well throw the law of biogenesis in there while I am at it. So basically, there's six laws that evolution directly contradicts. It is not science. It cannot even pretend to be science. And that's basically it. And let me just divulge my strategy here, if anybody hasn't figured it out by now. But basically, I'm asking a question that the inventor of Newton's law of motion, Isaac Newton himself, knew could not be answered as far as their creation. He knew that they worked, and we all know that the laws of motion work in the universe. And again, they're laws, emphasis on laws, because we use them every day. We fly in airplanes, we get in cars, whatever. I mean, I could design an experiment. What is that?
That's my phone. Sorry about that.
I can design an experiment, you know, to mimic the Big Bang, or try to mimic. Take a steel ball, put some dynamite inside of it, and explode it. And I guarantee we can use Newton's laws of motion, all of them, to design the experiment and figure out how far those pieces will go and what direction they will go. Do an energy balance equation, okay, where energy is balanced. It has to be added, and the energy that is added will be absorbed through the air friction and whatever else, and then these pieces of explosions will come to rest back on the Earth. Their potential energy will be overcome, and these particles will rest, come to rest on the Earth, okay? And the energy will not be created or destroyed, as is the first law of thermodynamics. And they'll come to a rest, which basically expresses the second law of thermodynamics. And this is the basis, you know, where we get jet engines or any kind of mechanical motion, in fact. And all this flies in the face of evolution. And as I said, Isaac Newton couldn't answer the creation of his own equations, which explains why he spent more time studying the Bible than he did in developing physics and calculus. So I guess what I'm saying in 400 to 500 years, I mean, we could have this debate for literally another 500 years, and I'm not going to get my question answered on a scientific basis. I have gotten a lot of responses, okay, everything from, I think one guy turned out to be a Gnostic, one guy turned out to be an intelligent design person, somebody said we're being farmed for energy, one guy said I'm a parlor trick. And if you want to hear a parlor trick, I mean, just look at the evolutionists. They just invent time frames, time spans, a billion years, 100 million years. None of it makes any sense from a scientific standpoint. Even Fred Hoyle, or not Fred Hoyle, Stephen Gould, the so-called Harvard expert, leading expert on evolution, talks about something called punctuated equilibrium. Maybe one of my opponents can explain that to the audience, so I don't have to. Maybe they can do a better job than me, but basically he's trying to explain the fossil record and the relative appearance of fully formed fossils all over the world with no evolutionary evidence whatsoever. So I guess what I'm saying, and I'll say it again, it has nothing to do with science, absolutely nothing. It is a philosophy. It is a religion of atheism. And until somebody can show me an experiment, mathematically, scientifically, where something blows up and the particles of that explosion rotate around a center core, as is our solar system, and there's also Kepler's laws of planetary motion. I should throw those in there as well, that aren't explained by evolution. So that's it. And none of these experiments, I mean, life will not be created from non-life, as says the law of biogenesis. And on top of that, I find it very intriguing that my description of the Big Bang Theory initially on the first debate was basically incorrect. Fred Hoyle, who came up with the original Big Bang, said it really had nothing to do with an explosion. He was actually mocking those people that's how they explained it. He said that the universe arose from some kind of primordial chaos and not an explosion. So I find that very interesting that nobody corrected me on that, because it's supposed to be about science. You know, if somebody came to me and said, well, F equals MA squared, I would immediately say to the person, no, it's F equals MA, because that is Newton's law of gravitation.
Right,
but that's my point.
You made up about 5 to 7 minutes that you've lost. Okay. Now, what's your response, Kelly Smith? You're debating finally a professor of a university that is an expert in evolution. So, Kelly, you heard all this. How would you respond to at least, and I'm sure you're jotting all this stuff down, respond to all these different points he's made that says that no one can prove him wrong?
Well, okay. A couple of things I want to say before I get into his specific questions. One is, note what Mr. Rosselli has done. He's asked me to explain Newton's laws, Kepler's laws, the origin of life from non-life, punctuated equilibrium, and probably a couple of other things that I lost in the maze. I mean, there's no way I can possibly do that in less than a semester's course, and even then that's pretty ambitious. So no matter what I answer, he's going to be able to pick at something and say, well, you didn't do a great job answering that. And this is Mr. Rosselli's technique, it seems to be. He asks a lot of questions, but he doesn't answer them himself. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to talk a little bit about punctuated equilibrium, which is something I know quite a bit about, and then I'm going to say a word about the Newtonian thing, which he seems to like to talk about, and I'm going to ask him a question. Okay. So punctuated equilibrium is an alternate view of the way evolution functions. It's not anti-evolutionary theory. It's basically a debate within the evolutionary community about the rate at which evolution proceeds. Some people believe that evolution typically proceeds continually and gradually, and some people believe that evolution basically sort of works in fits and starts, so that nothing interesting happens for a while, and then the conditions change, and there's a very rapid burst of evolution. So it's not an anti-evolutionary theory. It's just a debate amongst evolutionists about something that we don't really have perfectly good evidence on. And it's certainly not true to say that punctuated equilibrium people like Stephen Jay Gould believe that the evidence shows that organisms just pop into existence. It's true that it's hard to find some fossil transitions for some of these kinds of things, but that's not the only kind of evidence we have. So that's something about punctuated equilibrium. Now, I'm perfectly willing to talk about astrophysics. Right, I'm not an expert on it, but I can talk about it. But before we talk about astrophysics, what I would like Mr. Rosselli to do is explain clearly exactly what the contradiction is supposed to be between Newtonian physics, or whatever he wants to say, and evolution. Because unless I understand exactly what the contradiction is, I don't know how to respond to it. I can certainly say something about Newton's laws of motion, but I don't know exactly what his complaint is. And finally, I want to pose a question for him. Now, it's certainly true that just because a bunch of people think something doesn't make it true, even if those people have letters after their names and they're very well educated. On the other hand, it should at least give you pause that 99.9% of the people who've studied evolution agree with it, and they think the evidence is not just there, but it's overwhelming. Mr. Rosselli says it's not science, it's garbage. So one of the things I would like him to explain to me is, how does that happen? What are these scientists doing? Are they lying to people? Are they stupid? Do they not understand the facts? What exactly is going on with them?
Am I up?
Go ahead, Ron.
Basically, I mean, I don't know, you know, I mean, excuse me, I missed the first few minutes. I don't know if you're, you know, a repeat opponent on this or not, but this is my third show, okay? So an hour and a half.
Yes, I've listened to both your previous shows.
Okay, so basically, then you'll know that my first question, I said I didn't go through all the scientific laws, L-A-W-S, that I just went through. I went through just one. How does the Big Bang conform or comport with Newton's laws of motion?
To answer that right now? If that's your question, I will answer it right now.
Go, answer away.
The answer is it doesn't. Newton's laws of motion don't pertain to the Big Bang. I mean, Newton's laws of motion are a very useful approximation of how the universe works, but strictly speaking, they're false. Newton was a very smart guy, but since Newton, there have been a whole bunch of other smart people, like Einstein, and it's now thought that the Newtonian laws are really just laws that work really well when things are moving relatively slow, and you're talking about large scales in terms of size. But when you're talking about the Big Bang, you're talking about a situation where space and time were not defined in the same way that they are in our modern universe. And it's before, in some sense, the modern laws of physics were born. So trying to apply Newton's laws of motion to an event that happened before they were defined is just a non sequitur. It doesn't make any sense at all.
Okay. All right, and then maybe, or so we'll call that neutral, so there is no answer. Okay, so his laws
became... I didn't
say
there was no answer. I said there's no Newtonian answer.
All right, so his laws became valid at some, you know, point Y in the past, and nobody knows, and they're just kind of there, and they're not exact.
I didn't say nobody knows, and they're just kind of there. I didn't say any of that, but go ahead.
I mean, if they're not exact, I mean, for our four-dimensional world, three space and one time, I'd like you to get on an airplane with somebody that doesn't believe Newton's laws of motion are exact.
They're not exact. This has been quite well established. You can do experiments, like you like to talk about. You can do experiments that clearly show that Newton's laws of motion are almost accurate, and like I say, at low speeds. The closer you get to the speed of light, the less accurate they are. And we can do experiments like, for example, you can take an atomic clock and you can put it on a plane and you can fly the plane to Hawaii. And when the clock gets off the plane in Hawaii, it doesn't have the exact same time on it as a clock that sat on the ground. And you cannot explain that with Newtonian physics. But relativistic physics explains, in fact, it predicts that.
All right. So what about the first and second law of thermodynamics? I mean, how do things evolve? I mean, forget the whole, you know, survival of the fittest contradiction. But how does something evolve? I mean, from slime or whatever the substance was, stardust or whatever I've heard. How do those conform with the first and second law of thermodynamics?
Well, let's talk about the second law, because I think that's really what your complaint is. And for the viewers that may not be familiar with it, let me summarize quickly what that is. The second law of thermodynamics says that over time, you expect there to be less order in a system, so the systems get more chaotic. If you build a bridge and leave it alone, it's going to tend to fall down. It doesn't make itself into a better bridge, right? And that sounds like it's inconsistent with evolution. This is a standard line that creationists bring out. However, the second law of thermodynamics only applies to systems where there's no energy input, and the Earth is not a system with no energy input. The Earth is being bathed in radiation from the sun 24 hours a day, and because of that, the second law of thermodynamics does not say that you expect there not to be an increase in order. And if it did, let's suppose you're right, just for the sake of argument, that the second law of thermodynamics says there should be no increases in order. Then it would be a complete mystery how, say, hurricanes, tornadoes, other kinds of organized systems could ever arise on Earth.
Hmm? Interesting. Okay.
Yeah,
so how would you respond to that, Rob?
Well, that is very interesting. So you're saying that the very name entropy means an increase in disorder. I mean, things decay and useful energy is being used up. I mean, that's the second law of thermodynamics. I mean, to sit here and say
in an energetically closed system, yes. But the Earth is not such a system.
Why is it called a law then? If what's open and what's closed?
Well, if there's energy being placed into the system from outside the system, it's open, right? It's closed if that isn't the case. So the standard example you might get in Physics 101 of a closed system would be a thermos bottle. It's not really perfectly closed, but you can sort of pretend that a thermos bottle is designed to have no energy input from the outside. So if I put some water in the thermos bottle and leave it on the counter, I don't expect to come back 2 hours later and find it turned to ice. That would be an increase, or rather a decrease in entropy, and that would be really hard to explain. However, if the thermos bottle has a refrigerator element in it, and I plug it into the wall, and I come back 2 hours later, I shouldn't be too surprised that it's a block of ice because I've put energy into the system. That's how the order got there. And the same is true with biological evolution. The ultimate answer to how organisms arose and evolved is the energy input from the sun and also from the Earth's heat, but mainly from the sun.
Okay. So what is your definition? Is the universe a closed system? Is the Earth a closed system or an open system?
Earth is clearly open. Whether or not the universe is open is an open question. We don't really know the answer to that question. And again, that's getting into really theoretical areas in physics that I'm not qualified to comment on.
All right. So,
yeah, there's a whole debate about dark energy and all that I know it exists, but I don't know the details of it.
Sure.
Now, so far, really, we are going through Rob's argument why evolution is false, in his opinion. Now, and we've gone, Kelly, again, your expertise is in evolution. I'm kind of going to bring it back to Kelly now and say, Dr. Kelly, and say, listen, you are an expert teaching evolution. He believes evolution should not be taught. What is the importance of evolution to teach in schools? I mean, I think that's a great point to bring up in this whole thing. We're going into where I'd say neither of you are so qualified experts in a topic debating back and forth, which, again, I need to probably just send this podcast to an expert in that area and have them rate this and see where we're at in this. But now the fact is, the debate really is why it should be taught. Let's say we don't have proof, which Rob says we don't. Now, you're an expert in this.
That's quite an assumption to make, but okay.
What did you say? What did I say?
Well, you said, let's say we don't have proof, and I'd say that's a huge assumption to make, but I'll go with you for a little while.
That's the perfect way that no one who's debated Rob has said, Kelly. I'll tell you right now, flat out, and you'll see when Kevin Kratzky comes on at 10:30. The same thing, Kevin is a little play on my boat and the whole thing about evolution. He wrote something up in his blog about the Catholic Church and how they believe they should teach evolution and that there is a God involved in it. When we're looking at the far, far left that's looking at evolution, that there's certain basis of being an atheist, like Rob was saying. So I want to hear your point now. And see if Rob can respond to this, because, Ben, you're the expert in this. You should be able to bring that to the table now. Rob's put his argument out there. You put your case for evolution.
Well, I'm not sure there's a real question there, except other than to tell me why you believe in evolution. And I can sort of do that as quickly as I can. Ironically, it's a little difficult to talk about the evidence for evolution because there's so much of it. There's so much of it that it literally, I mean, you could easily spend a semester doing this in class and you only sort of scratch the surface. But I can talk about a few kinds of evidence there are for evolution. So for one thing, there are fossils, right? We have these fossilized remains of animals and plants for that matter. If you put them together, they form a nice little series which shows you what we think has happened, where organisms have gone from very simple organisms to more and more complex organisms. And although there's change, there's also exactly what you'd expect if one organism is evolving to another, which is that organisms retain similarities to each other as well. And this is something you can explain with evolution, but without evolution, it's very difficult to explain. And this is why biologists say that nothing in biology makes any sense if you don't believe in evolution. And I'll give you just a couple of examples of this. For example, human infants have a tail. Human embryos have a tail. And normally, the tail is reabsorbed into the body before birth, but not always. Every now and then, there's a baby who's born that actually has a tail, and it has to be surgically removed. Now, if you ask an evolutionary biologist, why does this happen? The answer is, well, because our ancestors had tails. We human beings still have all the genes you need to make a tail, and occasionally there's a mistake in development, and those genes are turned on, and you get a tail. That's what happens. If you're not an evolutionist, it seems to me kind of perplexing to explain why human beings would occasionally be born with a tail or why all human beings have a tail as embryos and then it's reabsorbed. That's the kind of evidence that you can give for this, and you can talk about embryology, you can talk about biogeography, you can talk about fossils. There are enormous amounts of evidence for all these claims that evolution makes, and all that creationists tend to offer is an intuitive argument. They say, you know, it doesn't really make a lot of sense to me. Well, you know, science is oftentimes counterintuitive. I could explain to you how a plane wing generates lift and flies, but it's not intuitive. Most people don't understand the Bernoulli effect, and that doesn't mean the plane doesn't fly or that scientists are wrong when they explain to you how it flies. It's a bit of the same kind of thing.
Okay, Rob. Now, from hearing this, you already have your argument against fossils, right, Rob?
Yeah, I mean, we can get mired down into a debate on fossils, and they can be an explosion, like I mentioned before, and all this kind of thing. Here's one. Where'd the hydrologic cycle come from? That came from a random explosion, too? I mean, you know.
Well, that's not really a biological evolution question. That's a question about, you know, something having to do with hydrology. I'm not even that familiar with the basis of the question, nor do I suspect are you. So how is that relevant? Remember I said I'll be happy to talk about Newtonian physics if you can explain to me precisely how it's a contradiction to evolution. If you can't explain that, you're just throwing out a challenge that doesn't necessarily have any relevance.
Well, I can do the same thing to you. It's not
for me
to explain. It's not for me to explain. If I blow
Why not? Look, what science does is it chooses between available explanations, right? We have a very well worked out explanation of evolution. There are thousands of research papers written by credentialed people every year in evolution. So we know exactly what evolution says. And you say, hey, I don't like that, but it's not for me to answer questions. It's for you to answer questions. Why? Why do you get to ask all the questions? Why can't I say to you something like this? What is your alternative? How do you think life got here? Give me an explanation, and if it's a good one, I will buy it.
Hey, Neil, you know what? This is going in circles. I'm asking you the question. I'm asking you a very simple question.
He's answering your question.
He said the laws don't apply.
Look, you never answered my question about why scientists believe evolution either. You want me to play this game? Rob, I asked you a question before you asked me a question.
All right.
How do you explain why all these scientists who studied evolution think it's one of the best theories we ever came up with when you apparently think it's complete garbage? Answer that.
Look, I'm not here for the win of popularity contest. A scientist in America agrees with you. I don't care.
That's
fine. You just take a poll. I mean, did 99%?
I'm just asking you what you think explains the fact that scientists disagree with you. Because it seems like there are only so many obvious possibilities. They're crazy. They're stupid. There's a conspiracy. I mean, what's going on? Why do they do this?
Well, it might be a combination of all of those, and that's fine. And you know, you may think that's funny, or maybe it's not worthy of a response. But I don't care. I mean, why did 99% of the economists telling us, you know, we have this great economy and we're in, you know, something perpetual debt that's mathematically impossible to pay off? I mean, I'm making an analogy. I mean, I don't care if 99%. I don't care if 100% of scientists say that. What relevance is that? I mean, who can answer the question? I mean, I ask you a question, and you say, well, those laws don't apply. And then you say, well, I answered the question.
State your question explicitly. since you've kind of sort of answered my question, you think it's a combination of stupidity and conspiracy or whatever. So you state your question explicitly and how it's a problem with evolution, and I'll do my best to answer it.
Okay. Well, I mean, this is like beating a dead horse, you know, again. Demonstrate. Neil, I mean, is it me?
I understand. Well, if you don't want to answer that, that's fine. But again, I'm going to let the audience decide, especially email me at edhaley@tuttletutor.org, who you thought won the first round. They'll face Rob and Kelly. Again, Dr. Kelly, I definitely want you back on the program to go again. But I think what the ground rules have to be, remember, Rob, you said you had your guy, that you're willing to sign something. I think Kelly wants a piece of that. Kelly, did you hear about it? You missed this because he's just coming out of the woodwork, and I really think he's the one that's going to hold his own. And Kevin Karatsky is coming on next. Here's the fact. Tell him the challenge, Rob, real quick, and see if Kelly's willing to take it.
You can go on a website called creationscience.com. Okay, there's an open challenge. And you can read all about it. And I already talked to the author of that site, you know, Dr. Walter Brown, and he said he'd come on, but he wants an agreement because he doesn't want to have to sit there and explain, his science, what he studied. But it's all there. I mean, you can go read it, and there's a lot of other questions answered on that website, you know, from a physics professor, and I'm not a physics professor by any stretch, and I don't want to, make that claim. But, you know, I did have to take all this, you know, these courses in college, and I'm just still having a hard time figuring out where, you know, evolution fits into, you know, to our four-dimensional world that we live in, that we have to live in, with all these laws that I mentioned. And the reason they're called laws is because they've never been disproven. So what we're really getting down to here, what's really going on here is discussion on, you know, what is reality. I mean, I can sit
so
here.
Dr. Kelly wants to know, here's the thing. He wants to know what the challenge is. So he has to sign something to be in this?
Basically, it has to do with hydroplate theory and a cataclysmic flood event. And there's more to it than that, but that's a general overview. And all he's asking is that the person that he debates reads it and understands it. I mean, that person can disagree with it. And there's no religion allowed to come into play. And it's just strictly a scientific debate, and he's had, I think, I want to say $20,000 offer out there to any evolutionist that will take it, and nobody's taken him up on it so far for, I don't know, 10 or 12 years or how long he's had it on there. But you can go read about it on the site, and that was something I would love to sit here and sit back and listen to.
Well, I guess I'll have to read the site. I don't really understand from what you've said exactly
okay.
what you're talking
about. I'm not doing a good job. I'm not doing a good job explaining it.
I guess I just call myself a promoter, and I am promoting this fight in this matchup. But I said Kevin Karatsky Dr. Kelly against you and your friend in July. We'll set the date. I'll contact you, Dr. Kelly, so we can kind of talk off air another time for more things. But this is great. But I don't think ultimately, Rob, you answered the question. So maybe you need your Again, you have a protege. I guess you're a protege of somebody who you think is unbeatable. Am I correct, Rob?
Yeah, I mean, look, Neil. There's nobody that's unbeatable. You know, quote unquote. And you know, it's just not going to happen. Again, what this comes down to is you're going to believe what you're going to believe, and that's fine.
That's not what science is all about. It's not about just believing stuff. It's about going where the evidence points.
You have to believe that Newton's laws don't apply
to the beginning of time.
But the laws of thermodynamics don't apply.
Okay, I want to bring Kevin Karatsky on for the second half. So, Kelly, you can listen in. I'm going to put you on mute,
okay.
Or you can go into the chat room to listen to the next part of the show. It's up to you on what you want to do, but I'm going to bring Kevin Karatsky on now.
Okay.
I want to welcome Kevin Karatsky to the line. How are you, Kevin?
I'm doing well. How are you, Neil and Rob?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good. And you have your new partner, and Dr. Kelly, he's a professor at Clemson University that's an expert in evolution for the setup in July. But now you get your piece of Rob for 25 minutes. And, Kelly, you can listen in. It's up to you, or you can go on to the site and listen in on the Internet. It's up to you, whatever way you want to do it, and go in the chat room and make comments and I'll let you know what comments you make. So you make the decision, whatever you want to do. But let's get now Kevin Kravke to introduce yourself, and then you're going to face Rob.
Okay, I go by Katie Korotsky. I wrote Living with Evolution or Dying Without It, The Guide to Understanding Humanity's Past, Present, and Future. And the project started when I was 11 years old. Made a promise to myself to come up with some sort of a framework for morality that could unite the different peoples of different faiths of the world, since it seemed like that standard was leading to death and destruction all over the planet. And it was in 1990 I started the research with the history of religion. Does that seem like a good jumping off point, since they claim to have a monopoly on truth and morals? And lo and behold, I found the history of religion to be an evolutionary progression, so that directed me into evolution theory to seek answers. And the whole time I was dedicated to, as Kelly said, just following the trail of evidence and not caring where it took me. And then after a couple of eureka moments, I found myself immersed in a big picture. So it ended up answering much more than just rules for morality for humankind. It actually turned into the proverbial big picture.
Okay. So I'm going to let this time Rob get the first piece of you've gone with different points now. You know now when you're battling KD, it's a different story. So how would you, again, want to approach this argument, what KD's saying?
I don't know. There's a million questions I can ask. Why did evolution stop? I mean, why don't we have, you know, half ape, half people, half lion, half whale things running around, flying around? Where'd they all go? It just stopped.
Who said evolution stopped?
I don't see, you know, transitional forms running around anywhere.
Well, actually, you do. We are a transitional form. And in fact, any advanced species that will continue to evolve based on general adaptivity as opposed to specialized adaptivity, where it can become optimized and then no longer subject to variations caused by external threats and changing opportunities, as long as more is better, organisms will continue to evolve based on the threats that surround them.
Okay.
Okay.
So,
how would you respond to that?
I don't know. So evolution. I mean, how long did it take for a human to evolve from I don't know, whatever substance you want to put in there, slime, mayonnaise, mustard. How long did that take?
Well, it looks like the first life forms, according to my research, probably started about 3.8 billion years ago. 3.8
billion
out.
With a B?
Correct.
Okay.
And then got snuffed out by the second asteroid series of impacts that occurred, and then probably started up again about 300 million years later.
Well, that's quite a jump. So in 3.8 billion years, asteroid event. Now, this asteroid event, now this is the thing that's, you know, responsible for destroying all the dinosaurs, correct?
No, you've got your time frame way off. That was 65 million years ago.
Oh, it was 65 million years ago, okay.
Yeah, we've been battered by any number of events. There were six major extinctions that we know of so far, and the one 65 million years ago was probably the second largest one, but there was one far, far larger, 251 million years ago, the Permian extinction that wiped out some 93% of species.
Okay.
But the one 3.8 billion years ago, or with this second bombardment period, would have turned the Earth roughly into a molten mass again. So then everything has to cool, solidify, and then you get the conditions where organic systems can form once again.
So, in other words, life, everything's destroyed and life just kind of starts all over again? And just
absolutely.
Like you get molten magma or whatever's left after this asteroid basically demolished the Earth, and from those random substances, we get a human brain? That's what you're saying?
Well, over time and through all the trials and tribulations of hierarchical development, that is correct.
Okay. So time heals all contradictions. So we go from 3.8.
Wait. No. You just threw something out. State the contradiction.
Well, 3.8 billion years ago, let me come down to what, 200 million years ago, everything's destroyed, 65 million, everything's destroyed again. So where is the, in other words, where's the progression? Did it take, 3.8 billion minus what was it, 200, it's like 3.6 billion to get to point A, then everything's destroyed, then 65 million, we get to point B, but then it only took 65 million years for fully formed humans, male and female, evolving in exact parallel to happen? I mean, what happened from the 3.8 billion to the first cataclysm, I guess,
actually, all this presents an excellent segue into something you mentioned earlier called punctuated equilibrium. I'm not a big fan of Stephen Jay Gould. I think he had a handful of agendas. I don't think he's a good scientist. But that being said, punctuated equilibrium is just a way of defining the fits and plateaus, fits and starts, that has been a part and parcel of the evolutionary process. That is actually easily explained through the perturbations that have occurred with cataclysms. It just stands to reason that if you have a major event that takes place, for instance, the what is going to turn out to be, in my estimation, a asteroid impact six times as large as the Chicxulub event that killed the dinosaurs, that killed even many insects. Wiped out 93% plus of species. So you're going to have a very rapid period of evolutionary advancement that follows that once the dust settles. You're going to have an immense amount of design space to fill, and it's going to be whoever survived the event who would provide the species that will now radiate into the next age. And then as long as it stays stable, that rate of advancement is going to take the shape of a learning curve. At first, it's very steep, but then as the space gets filled up, conditions are relatively stable, then it's going to roughly equalize with at least a minimal rate of advancement, but nothing serious as occurs right after a major event.
That's quite a prediction. So in other words, 93% or whatever the species disappeared, but only 7% survived 65 million years ago. Is that what you're saying?
No, that was 251 million years ago.
251 million years ago. Okay. So in other words, it's just after this next big explosion, things are just going to, evolve again, like you say. So in other words, is every human going to die, or what's going to happen? It's just going to start new, things are going to start popping up from the ground, fully formed humans, or is it going to, and animals, or is it going to, we're going to have to go through this whole, half bird, half fish type things again to get back where we are?
Well, I don't know where you came up with a half bird type fish thing. That just suggests to me that you just don't understand how evolution by way of natural selection actually works. It works by having a common ancestor. And when they split apart and then they end up in two different environments, they go their separate evolutionary ways. And when that distance in time and space becomes significant enough, then they can no longer interact reproductively, and therefore they're going to be separated forever. Now there are even intermediate periods here where even modern day we have species that can reproduce. They haven't been separated long enough that they can't reproduce, but they produce infertile offspring, for example, zebras and horses. So that just shows you a transitional period to where the differences have not become developed enough that they can be considered separate species per se.
That's interesting. So basically, survival of the fittest fits into all this, right? I mean, the strong survive and the weak are left behind. Isn't that how evolution's supposed to work?
Well, it's how it works every day and will work every day forever and has worked every day throughout history. This is where I'm treading new ground with my book. Hopefully Kelly will be able to appreciate this. I understand that biologists take the assumption that natural selection or evolution by way of affects only organisms. Well, my argument is if you take natural selection in its most basic form, it affects everything in the universe because in its most rudimentary form, you can define it as the ability to withstand the threats that surround you. So using that logic, it would not only exist with organisms and the array of physical threats, microbial threats, rival threats, predatory threats. It would also apply to chemical structures. A case in point, you're familiar with the periodic table of elements, I'm sure.
Sure.
Yeah. Are you aware that they say 92 naturally found on Earth?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's not quite accurate. There's two that are missing. We can't find them on Earth. Number 72 and 75, hafnium and arenium. Would you have any way to explain that?
Would I? No.
Yeah. Well, I can using the logic that I defined. They do not have what it takes to withstand the threats that surround them. Therefore, they crumble apart. They can't hold themselves together.
They're elements.
I can give you... Pardon me?
I mean, we could sit here and they're elements. Now, explain, you know, I mean, I'm sure you have a lot of information, but the law of biogenesis, you know, life has never been observed to come from non-life. So just maybe you can kind of explain when that law came online, when that became valid, because... Obviously, I mean, thematically, what you're saying is that life, I mean, we're all alive, I mean, we can agree on that, had to evolve mm-hmm. from non-life. So just maybe you can explain, explain that.
Yeah, I can in principle. It has not been demonstrated in a laboratory to a significant degree yet, but it was about 6 months ago that I heard a story where somebody actually did create a life-like structure. This is still all very developmental, but that being said, we have many steps in the chain that have already been demonstrated in laboratories. But in
demonstrated in a laboratory, well, wait a second, that's a controlled environment, isn't it? With intelligent people applying their knowledge and their knowledge of science. But what
yeah,
we're talking
exactly.
about here is randomness from unnamed materials and substances.
Well, see, that's another myth about evolution.
It's
not a random process.
It's not a random process?
No.
You're telling me some substance X existed 3.6 billion years ago with a couple of cataclysmic events thrown in the middle, and a human brain can come out of that, and that's not random?
A human brain didn't come out of that. A human brain developed over time very incrementally in fits and starts, through increasing hierarchical development based on the process of natural selection. Natural selection itself is not a random process. Now, there are random elements to it, but natural selection exists by virtue of some structures being able to withstand the threats that surround them, which you can define as functionality. If something has survivability, then it will be able to withstand the threats that surround it by definition, others do not stand the test of time.
It helps to have a skull around the brain. I mean, I think you would admit that, you know, a brain is a pretty fragile substance outside of the skull.
Absolutely.
So the skull just kind of, that kind of figured out how to surround the brain on its own with no information. It just showed up?
Of course not, but can you imagine any functionality that the skull has and would therefore be selected?
Look, I mean, so I can sit here and instead of looking backwards, I mean, based on what I'm hearing, I mean, I can go in my refrigerator and dump something on my kitchen table and say, you know, all right, in 3.8 billion years, you know, a human brain's going to come out of this. Why would that be invalid?
I understand that's your talking point, but you have to understand how things take place. Yes, how things take place with very basic levels, with additional levels being built hierarchically as time goes on. You have to look, let's take intelligence, for example. Well, first let me backtrack a moment. There's a concept that I define as a selection vector universal. This is where you have certain trends in evolutionary history that apply most or all of the time. They have magnitude and direction, and therefore they create these trends, usually based on general adaptivity. If more is better, these things will continue to run their course. You find that simplicity would automatically develop into increasing complexity just based on the principles of self-organization in the fundamental forces of matter. Quarks and gluons and so forth combine to be subatomic particles. Atoms form, then atoms form in certain ways based on their natural tendencies. Molecules do the same thing all the way up the scale. So over time, with the mixing and matching of all these different building blocks of increasing size, you are going to get increasingly sophisticated structures which would eventually become transformed into organisms, which I can also explain.
Well, I mean, so far we're seeing a situation where each person's had their talking points in this debate. And also, I'm not, again, like I cannot see where Rob has always been able to put it back on you guys, both you and Kelly. Now, Rob, I want to ask the question, okay, this is me being a layman in this process. Mm-hmm. I don't understand a lot of the science. I'm an educator, and I'm absolutely lost in this discussion. And maybe because I'm trying to promote the heck out of the show, but because it's great and entertaining. But, Rob, you've said certain things. I would like proof now that you, why you truly believe there's not evolution. I mean, because ultimately even, and you know, I know your thought on the Catholic Church is that ultimately if evolution, there could be a God with evolution, as KD teaches.
And
so,
you know, first of all, I mean, I think I've had this, we have had this conversation. That's a whole separate show on a Catholic Church. Okay, don't ascribe the Catholic Church to any kind of Christianity. Okay, the Old Testament. This isn't you know, let's make a deal. Okay, it's either in or you're out, and that's fine, and that's your free choice and your free will. All right, so what the Catholic Church believes, you know, they also believe in a Queen of Heaven, which is extremely not biblical. It's actually based in Egyptian mythology. Okay, and I'll just leave it at that. So the Catholic Church has no credibility as far as Christianity. And again, that's a separate debate.
It's a definite separate debate. We're going to have to sign that debate, and I will find somebody to debate that, and that's another one. But we're going to write to this whole fact I'm just talking about, that you give me your talking points, and I, KD, you agree with me, right? And I'm sure that Kelly's saying the same thing. I want so that, hey, if I was interviewing you right now and you only had 5 minutes to go on a national show, and you would tell me three reasons why evolution should not even be considered a science. Give me those three reasons. Aren't you waiting for that, Katie?
Sure.
Yeah.
I'll give you one reason. There's not one established law, L-A-W, law of science, that conforms to evolution. Okay, you can make stuff up. You can believe whatever you want. That's what I'm saying. Okay. That's the scientific end of things, and then it comes down to let's look at the philosophical. I'll give you your three reasons. Now, philosophical. Now, you know, survival of the fittest. Okay, so you know, we evolved from apes, but you know, apes and monkeys, but they're still around, and physically they're a lot stronger than us, but yet we're a lot more intelligent than them. So you know, so what, survival of what fittest? You know, the physically fit, the intelligent. Okay, so it doesn't make sense on that level. And it doesn't make sense on a common sense level. I mean, you know, in an indirect way, I'm talking about the law of biogenesis. But like I said, I could just randomly say, all right, I'm going to take some substance, and in 3.8 billion years with a couple cataclysms thrown in between, it's going to evolve into in parallel into a male and a female human with a fully functioning brain with a skull around it. Now, you tell me, where is the science in that? I mean, we could basically make up whatever we want at that point. There's no science.
Okay. But that's an opinion. That's not
an
fact.
Opinion.
There's no fact.
You're right.
You've been going on the science. You've been going with the other science people saying none of these are facts. Well, this is an opinion. I want the facts of why.
You're right. You're right. I guess ultimately it's something we call faith. Okay, now you can have faith in whatever theory or whatever you want to believe in. If you want to believe that some random substance, hydrogen or ether or whatever it was, in 3.8 billion or 14.6 billion or whatever the latest number is popular from the evolutionist that they've come up with, you can believe that some random substance over time evolved into the brain of every male and female animal and mammal on Earth. Okay, you can believe that, and you can make up anything you want, or you can stick with the established laws of science and realize that something more intelligent than us, infinitely more intelligent than us, created these things and keeps them operating according to the known laws of science.
Now,
okay, now
Katie,
that's Christianity. You're given a free will to believe or not believe.
Okay, so that's two points. What's your third?
2 points. You want a third point? Okay, what I was getting at is just, okay, so you're talking about the scientific, the philosophical, not just common sense. I mean, do you realize what we're saying or what's being claimed here? A random substance is going to evolve into a human brain. Where did the information come from? Where did the order come from? Where did anything come from? It's just a complete mystery. They cloud it in mystery. Okay.
Katie. Okay.
And they develop these suppositions and everything around it. What really is going on here is they're saying God doesn't exist, so we're going to invent science to support that supposition, and that's their choice. That is your choice.
Katie, do you believe that? Katie, do you believe that, or do you believe there should be a God and evolution?
Well, the only way that you can really have a God and evolution be compatible in its orthodox form is for a deistic form of religion, or a deistic God that kicked off the Big Bang and then kept his or its or hers hands off the process, because everything else can be explained through natural forces, so you don't have to have an interactive God after that point. Now, when you start injecting that into the equation, that's when you start defying natural law. But, of course, Christians aren't happy with the deistic approach to explaining this stuff. In fact, without an interactive God, then nothing makes sense for them.
I see. But isn't that true? I mean, it's kind of like putting another human on Earth. Free will God gives. So I don't know. But I really have to get – I have an expert. And guess what? This is after this debate in August. And I'm going to call him. He's professor at he'll come to me and say, Franciscan University in Steubenville. And he has done talks on evolution and why we should teach evolution, and he's a Catholic. I want him to debate Rob, and I'm going to contact him. I'm friends with him on Facebook just to give that point, or even interview him on this subject. Because the thing is, there has to be a God involved in this. I don't know why. So, Rob, why don't you think that there could be a God involved in evolution?
Look, as I said, you know, the Bible, okay, it's an all-or-nothing proposition. Right? It's not a popularity contest. It's not to make friends. And that's the way it has to be. I mean, you know, the rock and the foundation, okay, it can't be a moving target. It's not let's make a deal, okay? You know, I am the way, the truth, and the life, okay? And, you know, in the book of John, and you don't have to believe it. You're not forced to believe it, okay? You know, if they will not believe you, wipe your feet off and leave, okay? And that's Jesus' own words, all right? And that's fine. That's your choice. What I'm saying is you can believe whatever you want to believe. It's your free will, okay? And that's Christianity, but at the same time, there's no negotiating that, okay? There's no, like, evolution. It doesn't make any sense.
Can I chime in?
Sure. Go ahead.
There you go.
Yeah. Now, you've used a technique here which has become quite common. And that is to portray science as just another belief. It has no more validity than any other belief does.
I have.
Therefore, you get to pick and choose by choice. Well, science is the only truth discovery mechanism that actually cancels out subjectivity. It requires definable data and a definable mechanism in order to account for that data.
Hey, Neil,
I just sat here
for half an hour listening to this guy try to explain something that 3.8 billion years ago, and he's going to come on here and talk about data? And I'm not scientific?
That is correct. You don't consider the fossil record data.
Fossil record? The Cambrian explosion?
What
fossil record are you talking about?
The one that is in the strata of the Earth.
The one that's in the strata of the Earth. So in other words, when Stephen Gould, leading experts on evolution, has to come up with something called punctuated equilibrium to explain the Cambrian explosion, you're telling me that out there's millions of transitional fossils that have been found?
Millions. There are certainly dozens that have been found to date.
Really?
Yes, really.
And where are these?
You can find them described in just Google transitional fossils. The whale evolution is extremely well documented at different phases of limb length and function, probably 10 or 12 in all. Actually, our ancestry is quite well documented. From about 7 million years. Yes, it is. From
with
about
fossils?
7 million years ago.
With physical fossils?
With physical fossils. With physical fossils.
And where are these? Like, what museum can I go to see these?
You can Google that up, too. You can find them in books. You can find them in museums. This is all extremely common knowledge for anybody who has gone out and sought it. But you haven't sought any of this knowledge because you started with a conclusion, and then you've been trying to work backwards in order to justify your chosen conclusion. So, I mean, that's...
So, Katie,
For example, the reason during the Big Bang discussion, or I should say the black hole discussion, you said you didn't know very much about these things. Well, how can you start debunking astrophysics as it is portrayed if you haven't even researched it to the point where you know what their arguments are? And this is even more true for evolution theory. You really don't even understand the most basic principles behind it, which gives convincing evidence that you started with the conclusion that you desired, and now you're working backward trying to justify and cherry-pick the evidence and interpret it the way it works for you.
Now I'm going to stop right there. Rob, and this is what I'm going to say. Rob, your guy that you're going to have as your tag team partner in July,
mm-hmm.
and Kevin's going to sign this, I'm putting Kelly back on. Dr. Kelly, you're back on the air too. You guys are willing to debate Rob's guy. Both
Who's
you
Rob's
and
guy?
Katie. Oh, you got to hear it, Katie. Go ahead, Rob. Who's your guy?
Well, I'll give you the website. You can go on. It's creationscience.com. Okay, that's one of the better websites out there. Okay, it's purely scientific, and this is not just for these gentlemen here. It's for anybody that's listening. I can have a lot of questions answered, and I'll say it again. I mean, we can literally argue for the next several hundred years, and I don't see this getting anywhere. So it is your free will to believe or not believe, and that's what I'm going to say. And I'll try and if I can't round up Dr. Brown for July, I'll find somebody else.
And I'll add that it's your free will to be scientific or not, as you choose.
Okay, I mean, I'll go out and design a bridge or an airplane based on Newton's laws, and you go out and design a medical device based on evolution and,
Actually, that's been done quite often. It's the cutting edge in design right now.
Cutting edge, all right.
Think of the example of the Kitty Hawk becoming a 787. Did that happen as when you shook things up? No, it happened incrementally through the development of
with intelligent people applying laws of physics and motion.
NASA just recently designed an antenna better than the engineers could using evolutionary processes that were not designed. Look it up.
Evolutionary
processes. You can find a picture of it. I'll tell you exactly how it works.
Yeah, but intelligence had to go into designing these things. Where did the intelligence begin with?
It doesn't have to. All it requires is functionality that allows an organism to survive, and it will produce itself over time based on competition.
I think obviously we need to spend a little bit of time talking about what natural selection is, because I think there's some confusion about what that process is.
I think you've gotten it. I think I'm going to have to go back into my textbooks and just go basics, because, if, again, our listeners out there are not as intelligent as all three of you guys are in science. I mean, I understand the simplicity of Darwin's theory of evolution, but Rob hasn't been able, he's maybe his three talking points to debunk it. But I've said no one's given proof except the evolution side, but Rob just says it's false. So your guy, Rob, whoever it's going
I haven't
to
given
be,
proof. Neil, it's
proof.
Our reality.
Evidence
would
be
the
nice.
Laws of physics. I mean, if you drop something, it's going to go. It's going to fall. You can design experiments based around the laws of physics.
Geez, Rob, why is it that most physicists accept evolution? If it's so clear, why do most physicists accept evolution? The vast majority.
That's fine. That's their business. And when my opening argument in the first show, I said, I don't care if there's 1,000 or 100,000 physicists with IQs of 500, I'll stand up there with my IQ of 100 and ask the same question. I'm not here
but
to win a popularity contest. People have to make their own choice.
It seems perfectly legitimate for people to wonder why they should take your word for this when you admit that you're an engineer, you don't know that much about physics, as opposed to a bunch of physicists who wrote the book, literally, on physics that you quote.
They don't have to take my word on it. Okay, well explain to me this. Let's talk a little philosophy. Then why do we have to prove the Big Bang with something like CERN? That's the best physicists in the world, the computer guy, engineers, everything. Everybody is putting all this design and intelligence into something to prove a random explosion known as the Big Bang. I mean, explain
what's the
that
problem
to me.
With that? We have a theory. We're trying to collect evidence for it. This is a bad thing. You
I'm
think
not saying it's a bad thing, but you just said it's a theory.
Prove it?
You just said it's a theory.
A theory. Like gravity is a theory. There are lots of things in science that are theories. That's not bad. That's an honorific in science. That's part of the problem. You think theory just means I just made this stuff up.
Yeah, there's many any complex scenario cannot be formulated in terms of a law. It will forever remain a theory because it's built on an aggregation of evidence. It cannot be done as geometry, logic, or mathematics can be proven. So, I mean, that's really a non sequitur as well.
Yep.
So, Rob, the guy says, I think you guys are going to make $20,000 if Rob's guy is named. So you're telling me, Rob, he's going to put it up because I'm telling you, if he wants huge ratings, he wants all the people to be out there. Blog Talk Radio, I'm sure you let me know. We'll get this date set. We need a month to promote this. And I'm sure that with the help of both Katie and Dr. Kelly, I guarantee they'll get their side to be listening to this. But, Rob, definitely get him. Because if we go back and forth like we did last, they're willing to sign it. They're willing to sign it. So they'll go to the website, they'll check it out. I'll keep promoting this. I'm going to create a vignette on this that I'm going to play on my program every night because I can't wait till this matchup, and I think it's going to be great. So thank you all for being on the program. I thought it was very good. Again, I'm still confused. I need to listen to this show because being a producer, too, as the host as well, I just brought up the questions. I mean, no one's giving me a straight answer. You guys are giving me a great argument for evolution. But Rob debunks it, and then Rob brings another question up. That's Rob. Again, I know for a fact that you have somebody a little bit more knowledgeable that can help you through this last part because it is, again, here's the question I want to ask Rob. 95% of evangelical Christians believe there's no evolution, right?
I don't know what the stats are. Then if that's the fact, then they're not evangelical Christians. They can say whatever they want.
Evolution. NOT, not evolution. 95% say that there's not evolution.
Oh, okay. I just want to answer your question.
But most Christians believe in evolution. That's clearly a fact as well. Of course, not if you don't count Catholics. But
not the Catholic Church, exactly.
But they are the original Christians in some sense. It seems kind of strange to rule them out of the party, but whatever.
Yeah, well, I didn't want to get involved in that. And I'm very knowledgeable of the Catholic faith. I probably could debate Rob and destroy him, but we're not going to go to that yet because we're still in the evolution end. Because I've read the Bible a lot, Rob, and I've seen different things, and then I would be able to go and say the question, if I wanted to bring another question out, because I know the fact that we're talking the Catholic Church. What was the first church, Rob? First church.
What was the first church? The first organized church, you know.
First organized church.
Today? The organized church?
No. At the beginning, when Jesus died, which was the first organized church?
You don't have to say the Catholic Church. Okay.
Yes, exactly.
All right. So,
I just wanted to put that at the end of the show. Okay,
after
cool.
300 years of burning martyrs and, you know, burning people at the stake, yeah, they, you know, for political expediency, but we can pick this up in our separate debate.
Yeah, we're going to get it together.
The Protestants did their share of that, too.
Yeah, all right.
Okay. Well, the great show, guys. Thank you. I will first want to let's go with promoting each other. First of all, Dr. Kelly, where can we find more information on you? Do you have a blog or a website or something?
Yeah, I've got a Facebook page and a website. People are welcome to email me. You can just go to Clemson's website and find my contact information. I'll be glad to talk to people, as long as they're civil.
Oh, they'll be civil, trust me, because this station is a blog talk radio in a lot of ways is not far right. It's more center or left. And information on you, Katie.
You can find my book at www.livingwithevolution.com, and I've also got a blog where you just add /blog to that address, or you can get to my blog through my website or vice versa.
And Rob, where can we find more information on you?
Well, my site's boxofsunglasses.com. It's one word, and everything's there that people might be interested in. Not just evolution, but other aspects of the so-called conspiracy. And take it or leave it, it's there. It's the best I can do.
And is it based on, Rob, the question I'd ask about other conspiracy theories, is it based on faith, or you just don't believe that that's why it's a conspiracy? That's a question I have to ask, because I do believe there's conspiracy theories. But, again, it's a theory. And in my right, a theory is not truth.
Look, I mean, when I say that, I'm being cynical. I mean, look, in this country, and I make this analogy from time to time, we're on the verge of economic collapse based on the Federal Reserve System, which is a system of perpetual debt, which is mathematically impossible to pay off. Okay, and to go to statistics, I would say 99% of these so-called expert economists would call people that warned of the day of reckoning that is coming for us economically. 99% of those experts would cast off people that warned of this as conspiracy kooks or whatever. So that's why that's just an analogy. That's why I'm not here for a popularity contest.
No, definitely you're not there for a popularity contest. But you make great radio, and I appreciate you coming on, Rob, and I appreciate you battling two experts. And I'm looking forward to you bringing your expert in anti-evolution on to debate these guys.
Yeah, I appreciate it again, Neil. And am I, the other guy still here, or they took off already?
I'm still here. Right.
Oh, yeah. Well, have a good night.
Yeah, you too.
Yeah, we'll talk to you again. All right, thank you.
All right, get your students to listen to this and tell them what they think on this, okay?
Oh, I will do that, not to worry.
Okay.
All right, Kelly. Friend me on Facebook. Katie, friend me on Facebook as well. I don't think Rob's on Facebook, but friend me on Facebook, Neil S. Haley.
Yeah.
Anyone listening, friend me as well on Facebook. Yeah?
Okay. I'm not on Facebook, but I'll contact you, Kelly, along the way here shortly. Okay.
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 All right, guys. It's great connections, and that's what's great about Blog Talk Radio. Take care, guys. Good night.
Right. Good night.
Okay.
Good night.
Thanks, Neil.
All right, bye.
Bye.